things that you know about people that's not public, and you don't really talk about it publicly because of whatever reason. And it feels like this was the movie industry's big secret.
Yeah.
And there were things coming out, like in apparently episode of 30 Rock, Tina Fey had written a joke about this. Seth MacFarlane, during one of the Oscar announcements, the year that he hosted the Oscars, the nomination announcement, he made a joke about Harvey Weinstein. And I mean, so I guess that people sort of knew that he had this reputation for this and like just wouldn't really talk so much about it. But the number of actresses now that have come out.
What's
it, about
this, 12, 13?
Yeah.
And it just speaks to how much power this man was able to wield. And it's sad. And I retweeted something last night from Terry Crews, former NFL linebacker who turned actor. And he talked about being in a party recently where a big honcho there in Hollywood just grabbed his private part.
Yeah, I saw that, yeah.
Unfreaking real. And here's a guy, muscles everywhere, and you think he would have knocked the guy out. He said that he thought about doing that, but knowing the power that this big movie or Hollywood honcho had, he and his wife just left the proceedings. He received an apology from the guy, but still, who the hell walks around grabbing people's private parts like that?
Well, I mean.
We had someone who was running for the White House who's now sitting there who spoke about grabbing women, but, and then Terry Crews talk about how afraid he was, didn't know what to do. It was a surreal moment. And then you have all these women. Just imagine how they feel, how powerless they feel.
I mean, Terry Crews is a guy who clearly is someone who could probably beat up most of the country.
Probably could have beaten up everyone in that party.
Right. And then you think about an actress who's just starting her career and thinking, all right, I have a decision to make.
Yeah.
I mean, do I pursue my dream? Or have to give in to this type of behavior? Or do I turn my back and risk never working in the movie industry again? I mean, it's just terrible.
This is sad.
That man power over somebody being abused like that is some of the most sickening behavior that people are capable of. And then this video or this audio that's out there of this model. Oh, my God. That is the worst. Where he's basically saying, yeah, I'm sorry about that. It's just I'm used to this stuff. And she's like, used to it? It's like, yeah, just whatever. Can we forget about it? Just like totally like sloughing it off. Like, yeah. Like, don't, all right, stop. Like, it's almost, and I'm paraphrasing that, but he's almost like, all right, stop complaining about that. Just come to the
he's
office.
He's a predator.
Just stop.
Straight predator. Yeah. And people excuse this behavior. Allowed him to get away with it. Yeah. Knew about it and allowed him to get away with it.
It's what it seems like. It's what it seems like.
Oh, man.
It really
sickening.
Does. Well, because the guy was uber successful, and it was like you were in his world, and you'd be pretty good. Like, you'd be able to, your things would be good for you. And now you have this. And then, like, dude, like, I know that you want to try to protect yourself, whatever, but can you stop denying things? Like, this many people aren't going to come out against you now.
What
and
a creep.
This be like the, like some sort of major conspiracy against you, right? Come on.
Yeah.
All right. So,
yeah.
Moving on from that.
Yeah.
To talk about this letter that Roger Goodell wrote to the NFL teams, which is basically saying, we respect you guys, we respect what you're trying to say, but we believe that the anthem, kneeling during the anthem and demonstrations during the anthem is hurting more than it's helping, and we would like you to stand for the anthem. And quite honestly, as much as I've been totally against 90% of the Roger Goodell tenure in the NFL, I understood him in this regard.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what side I've been on with this. We have talked about it a ton, but I get where he's coming from because it's starting to hurt business a little bit. Now, I don't think it's the main thing that's causing the ratings to go down, but I do think that any little bit of it that could be impacting the bottom line, the commissioner has to come in, has to respect both sides and say, I get it. And we want you to express yourselves. And we have allowed these things to happen. But now we feel like we can do both. We can hear where you're coming from. We can do good work. We can listen to your side, and we can also stand for the anthem. Can we do that in some sort of compromise?
I am with you to a certain extent, and all he had to say and all Jerry Jones and these other owners have to say is, hey, this is hurting our business. Come out and be honest about that.
Sure.
We're not silent or insensitive to the cause that you're fighting for, but it is hurting our bottom line. And if they just came out and were honest about that instead of hiding behind other rationales, fine. And that's essentially what Roger Goodell is doing. The other part of me sees this as a win for the detractors, those who don't want to do a damn thing about what these protests are really occurring because of social injustice in our society. They don't give a damn about that. And I, speaking of tweeting out stuff, I tweeted out something, a T-shirt the other day. So you when you know the protesters, if they stand, you're upset. If they kneel, you're upset. If they sit, you're upset. So you're going to always be upset because you don't really care and believe in the cause that they are trying to bring attention to. So in that vein, you know, I think that Roger Goodell is giving breath and a win to the detractors because, yeah, he's saying the bottom line is the bottom line and we need to not mess with the bottom line, one, because it's going to affect our business and it's going to affect your salaries, essentially. But that being said, here's the other deal. Yes, has this been a barrier for the league? Has the message been lost? Yeah, and that's what those who oppose what these guys are fighting for wanted. They wanted to deflect from the real meaning of the protest.
Well, some did and some just couldn't get it. Right,
right. Like, some don't want to get it and will never get it,
right.
And others, they and those are the ones who want to deflect from this, and so you have these people that are all burning their season tickets, which is stupid, and saying I'm never going to watch another game, and I'm through with NFL ticket and all that, whatever. So they're never going to get it, and so they use this as a barrier to not even address the situation. And he's correct when he says that yes, this has been a barrier to the real message and the meaning of the protest. And we'll see. You got Malcolm Jenkins, who's been out there in the community doing things. There's other players, numerous players in other communities doing a lot of things, going on these ride-alongs with cops and having a dialogue in their communities. And that's what you want because it has to start at the grassroots. I have no problem with using your platform to announce what it is you're protesting, in which they've done. Colin Kaepernick did, because he started this whole conversation. And so you use that platform. Now, what do you do after that? And that's what a lot of people who were selling Colin Kaepernick were asking. Well, what, are you going to put your money where your mouth is? Well, those who are asking those questions, what are you doing to help further the conversation other than, you know, sitting here and vilifying Colin Kaepernick and other players? What are you doing to help us move down the road to a better place in our society? And you have a number of players who are doing that, Jenkins I just mentioned. And so that's where it has to start in the grassroots communities and build from there on out. But I have no problem with the conversation starting on this big, huge platform that these guys have at their beck and call. So the barrier, yeah, for those who want to deflect, Roger Goodell is correct. Now let's see if we can all come to an agreement like they're doing there in Philadelphia with the Eagles, and you have other members of that community who have come together. I think it was Boston a couple weeks ago. You saw the Penguins, and not the Penguins, excuse me, the Bruins and the Red Sox and the Patriots. They all had a big meeting there at Fenway where you had all these different entities say, hey, yeah, we're gonna come together and give voice to this issue. And so that needs to happen around the country.
Well, also, I guess we can do this too, is give mention, as you just talked about, Malcolm Jenkins and ride-alongs. I just read a story this morning about Snacks Harrison of the Giants, mm-hmm. and other players,
right,
that went to talk to youth football teams, and they also brought this issue up when talking to them and just getting into the minds of younger people,
right,
and where, what they feel about this. So, I mean, those things are important to talk about, too, because it never gets covered like something as controversial as kneeling,
right,
during the anthem. So that's where it needs to go to. And I do believe that if an owner says to its team, you know, you need to stand for the national anthem, that the player is probably going to you're going to have to listen to that.
Well, I either stand or stay in the locker room. Right. And give them that option. Right. If they don't want to stand, okay, you can't force them. I don't believe. I don't in the league operations manual everyone's referencing since Goodell sent this letter out. I don't know if you can demand that they leave the locker room.
And the language doesn't say have to. It says should.
Right, should. It suggests that you do that, and they're now contemplating adjusting that language. And what you just mentioned about Snack Harrison and these other players, we had a program. I'm on the board of directors for the Boys and Girls Club down in Austin. And a number of years ago, I had a program. It was called the 1060 Club. A former quarterback at the University of Texas, Peter Gardier, wore number 10. I wore number 60. And so he and I started a little entity within the Boys and Girls Club called the 1060 Club, where we take kids to games, UT games, and we take them to dinner and do all kinds of stuff in the community there in Austin. And one of the things we did, I have a number of friends who are in law enforcement. So I got Officer Anthony Hippolito there at the APD, Austin Police Department. He and his partners, we went and had dinner with a group of these kids because we wanted to foster a better relationship between that community and the police officers. And so everyone can do their part. But I don't hear any of these people who, once again, vilifying these players, talking about what they're doing in the community to help this situation, to foster a better relationship between any and everybody, no matter what your color is, with law enforcement. So that's something we did a while ago. That's something that should continue to be done because when you're policing certain communities, you know, there's no relationship. There's no type of communication. You know, you got the powers that be that go in and sometimes, and I'm not saying all the time, but too many times, too often, they're going in and just, you know, with all the power that they possess, putting their foot on these certain people of color. And so that's not right. So we need to have this dialogue between law enforcement and these communities that they police.
Let's go to Eric in Texas, who's on CBS Sports Radio. Good morning, Eric.
Good morning, gentlemen.
What's up?
Nothing. I was just calling about the national anthem thing, and I'm in my 50s now. I've been a Chiefs fan for 52 years. Go Chiefs. And, I mean, sitting, standing, laying down during the anthem, it's not going to change the way people think. It's just going to take time for this newer generation, as you call the millennials, to grow up, because the old people are going to think the way they think. They're going to hate the way they think. They're going to love the way they love. You can't change people's perspective.
Eric, I would agree with you to a certain extent. That's why I had so many problems with what happened there at Oklahoma. And I'm not just picking on Oklahoma, but that one comes to mind. When you had those kids on that bus, in that fraternity, in that sorority, singing the song that they were singing, that there will never be any in, they use the N-word, in our fraternity, because they're going to grow up and they're going to own businesses. They're going to grow up and they're going to be part of this society, and they're going to still harbor those feelings. I would hope that they wouldn't, but the fact that they have learned that behavior, and it is a learned behavior, and the fact that they felt it was all right to sing that song, that lets me know, and all of us, that they're going to have those same feelings moving forward. We would hope that they could be changed, but I think to a certain degree you are correct. There are a lot of people that feel that way, and they will always feel that way. I've shared the stories the things I've been involved in, dating someone of Caucasian race and not being able to go over to the family's house until the bigoted, racist granddaddy had left, you know, the Christmas proceedings. I mean, and then it's funny when you hear biggest say, well, you got to be able to get over that. Why are you always talking about that? Why can't you get over it? Well, I'm over it. I didn't allow it to hold me back. But how do you process things like that? You know, even worse, you know, family members being cavity searched. I mean, because they drive a fancy damn car and you ask them why they drive a fancy car and it's none of your damn business. Police officer, did I do something wrong? No, I didn't. Other than answering you in the manner in which my relative did, saying it's none of your business. I got a fancy car.
As humans, we can never understand someone's pain other than our own. Generally.
Yeah.
I shouldn't say never. There's some people that are really good at that, of being empathetic. But generally, we cannot understand someone else's struggle without having to go through it. You project yourself into that situation and think you know what someone's going through, when in reality you have no clue.
And to summarily dismiss someone else's plight, that is just wrong. And that's what people continue to do when we have this conversation. not knowing what they know, but they don't want to address the lengthy history we have when it comes to this.
Yeah, and it's just it's an annoyance to them and having no idea.
They have no answers.
Right. And I also, there's two things that, and you hear our last caller say that you're not going to change anybody's minds. And it is, you might change one person's mind, and even that's a good thing.
Right.
So you don't just stop trying to do this. But there's two things that have to be in this conversation. I just wish more people are on the same page with. One, we've said so many times that when these players are taking a knee, they are not protesting the flag, nor are they anti-military. You listen to Eric Reed of the 49ers. His father served, his brother served, his cousin served. He is all about supporting the military. And if you go up and down the sidelines and talk to those guys that are taking a knee and ask them if they're anti-military, there's not going to be one that says that. And I understand how people will take offense to them taking a knee during the anthem because it means something else to them. But you have to understand they are not anti-servicemen and women.
To understand,
and the other one is just because, and we've said this many, many times, just because NFL players make money, just because celebrities make money, doesn't mean that they can't be concerned with social issues. When you bring up that, those are the two things that I shut down in this argument. When someone goes, these million-dollar guys must be real tough for you because you're a millionaire. I mean, that's just, come on. We got to be better than that.
Right, but that's a cop-out as well, and that's why they obfuscate. You know, they want to deflect from the real message. Just because I'm a millionaire now doesn't mean I grew up a millionaire, and I'm not speaking about me. I'm just speaking these athletes. Just because they now are enjoying a great life that they earned, and that's the other thing. Oh, you're so ungrateful. As if something was given to them. As if that position on that football team was just handed out to them. It wasn't. And you have worked your butt off. You have attained a great life, and now I can't speak to my former existence. I can't speak for those who have not been able to get to where I am now as far as the totem pole of life. That's a ridiculous argument. And if they were poor people talk, who's listening to poor people? How often do we see people listening to those who are downtrodden?
Right.
Never. So if you're downtrodden, we're not going to listen to you. Now that you've made it in life, we're not going to listen to you. So who the hell are we going to listen to? And why can't I speak for someone who is less off than I am?
We've got a Brad Heller update. We've got Cliff Kingsbury coming up. And right now we got Brian Jones telling you to feel better.
That's right. Am I impressed with Relief Factor? Well, you know I am. I'm out of pain. I feel great. Every now and then something will jump up and bite me, but I take that Relief Factor and it knocks it right out. I was skeptical, but I'm no longer skeptical about Relief Factor. And how about this? Pete and Seth Talbot, the father-son owners of Relief Factor, have just told me that for the entire month of October, the entire month, they're going to send $5 to Africa New Life every time they sell a three-week quick start for just $19.95. That's right. $5 of that $19.95 is going to help rescue and care for a child in Rwanda. For years now, Pete and Seth have been helping these kids, but now they're going to be doing it with your help as well. You heard me say that for every person who orders a three-week quick start, nearly 80% go on to order more month after month. And that happens because in most cases, Relief Factor can really lower or even eliminate your pain. If you're in pain, please help yourself by joining Pete and Seth to rescue and save more kids in need. Order the three-week quick start for $19.95 at relieffactor.com or call 800-500-8384, 800-500-8384.
Give us a call right now, 855-212-4CBS.
Well, you were upset with Mikey B because he had that interview after the show.
Oh yeah, that didn't.
He wasn't.
That was definitely that was the thing.
He wasn't aware of your
right.
Your feelings. He wasn't considerate.
He wasn't in tune with the.
No, you would think he would.
The producer host relationship was fractured yesterday.
Yeah,
it was definitely fractured.
Well, welcome to my world.
Yeah,
I was fractured about the first week.
Had a front row seat to that whole thing for many.
Hey, Brian, leave me alone.
I hadn't said anything to you. I'm not messing with you. I'm speaking to Gio. So why do I need to leave you alone? Was I talking to him? I was talking to you, right? You and I were having a conversation? Yeah. Once again, I reiterate, welcome to my world, Gio.
Oh, you poor baby.
Why is that? Do you hear something? Do you usually dress people?
are you going, you people?
No, I'm not. Do you usually address people that aren't talking to you? No.
You know, lay out of this one.
There's going to be a fight today. I have a feeling.
There's going to be a fight, man. It'll be two thumps. Me hit him, him hitting the ground. That's it. No, I wouldn't hit you, Mike B. I like you. The bat would hit you. I wouldn't hit you.
The semantics on abuse. Thanks.
Yeah.
It's a nuanced argument. All right. Brad Heller is here. He's got an update. Then we've got Cliff Kingsbury after that, Texas Tech head football coach. Hey, Brad, what's up, man?
What's up, guys? All right, U.S. will miss the World Cup for the first time.
You are an awkward dude.
What's up, guys?
You're still in that, like, news radio.
Yeah, deal. Relax, dude. Let your hair down when you come in here. What's wrong with you?
Hello.
Chill.
Well, what's up, guys? How are you guys doing?
And tonight, the Yankees.
I'm mighty fine. It's an exhilarating morning.
Well, thanks. An awesome weather report, guys. Now here's the sports.
Yeah. We just did 2 minutes about how he abuses me, so loosen up.
Yeah, dude, before you get abused.
Oh, hey, guys.
We don't go with all that fancy, uptight stuff up in here.
Really depressing stories across the world, but the Yankees and the Indians tonight.
Do this, man. Do this. Just do this with your arms real quick.
I've never sounded like that at all.
But it is. Come on. Ooh. Shake it
that
out. Come
on. Better, yeah.
You can't even do that. You can't even do that tight. Damn. Yeah, well, do the update. I'm through with you. Lost cause. Look this way.
Can we start over?
No. Hell no. We just tried to start over.
Give him like En Vogue or something. You got anything
for him? Give him something to get him in the mood.
No, En Vogue.
Let's see. Maybe Guy. You like Guy, right? That's 90.
This isn't Guy, but close enough,
Black
I guess,
Street,
right?
Yeah.
Close enough.
Yeah. That get you in the mood?
All right, guys.
There he is.
All right. My arms are flailing. I'm ready. I'm ready. I'm like that inflatable thing outside the car dealer.
There you go. Yeah. All
right. That thing's in a much better mood than you.
It's got more wiggle than you.
That thing's never in a bad mood. Come on.
All right, Brad, take it away.
All right. The United States is going to miss the World Cup for the first time since 1986. All Bruce Arena's team needed was a tie against Trinidad and Tobago, but instead, a shocking 2-1 defeat.
No excuses for us not getting a second goal and at least a point out of the game. Give our opponent credit. They played well. They played hard on the day. They won a lot of individual battles against us.
So they would have. They're not going to move on. They played hard.
Did we send one of our engineers there to cover that press conference?
Hey, Martin's good.
I'm out of here. It's unfortunate.
He was upset, so he was very close to the microphone and refused to move farther away.
Sure. Okay. We'll go with that. What else?
I didn't get the sound. I'm just playing the sound.
Take it personally, dude.
What you need to do, though, if you hear a cut, it's that overmodulated. You know, you don't put in the update.
Ooh, coach him up, coach.
I mean, seriously, damn. Do you listen to
Brad,
the whole cut?
It's on now. I'm turning my mic off.
Now you play boys to men.
You and Gio, end of the road after that, dog. Yeah.
I'm going to storm out of here in about 90 seconds.
Yeah. Gio's done with you.
All right, go ahead.
Wow. Anyway, Argentina qualified, 3-1 win over Ecuador. Lionel Messi with the hat trick. I can't do it with this song playing. Wow.
You can't do what with this song playing?
What, Chris Forrest?
Baseball playoffs. Oh, boy.
Baby, so end of the road.
Baseball. Cubs and Nationals. Could be the end of the road for the Nationals. They'll try and stay alive. They play the Cubs. Game 4, NLDS in Chicago today. It was rained out yesterday. Same pitching matchup, Jake Arrieta and Tanner Roark, even though Steven Strasburg is on full rest. Here's Dusty Baker.
It didn't work out for Stras with his bullpen day. And, you know, we're all creatures of habit. And plus, we got full confidence in Tanner and Strauss, it'd have been better because he's feeling under the weather.
Now, according
to
USA Today,
to get his ass on the bump.
According
creature
to USA Today, Strasburg did not throw a bullpen session yesterday. Baker said he did. Strasburg told the team he didn't feel well after running a half mile. That's what he sounded like. He was wheezing. Yeah. In Cleveland, it's a winner-take-all game five. Yankees and the Indians. Corey Kluber will start opposite CC Sabathia. Kluber was knocked out in the third inning of game two, charged with six runs. Last time that happened, it was in April, and Kluber bounced back with a shutout in his next start. From the NFL, the Saints trading Adrian Peterson to the Cardinals for a conditional draft pick. NBA news, the Sixers and Joel Embiid reportedly agreeing to a contract extension. 5 years, $148 million.
All right, Brad. I like this beat. This is a good one.
It's a good tune.
All right, we've got Cliff Kingsbury joining us here in just a minute. But the first question for him that I'm going to have is something that we talked about many months ago. Not many months, but a couple months ago.
Many moons ago.
Many moons ago. the guy named Art DeLugich of the Lano News asked him a question. You're going to hear him introduce himself again. And Art had this question for Cliff Kingsbury that was just beautiful. And it was so good and so funny and so appropriate that we had Art DeLugich on our show to talk about it. So I'm going to ask Cliff that with my... with my first question, but first let's remind the listeners of Art DeLugich.
Art DeLugich with the Lano News. Follow-up to Mr. Bowles' question, Coach. You're a fine coach. It's a great conference. Great school. All-world offense. I figure there may be 5,000 seniors who start on defense in Texas a year. You recruit from other states. Why can't you get 10, 15, or 20 who can hold your opponents to 30 points or less a game?
That is just amazing. A game. About 5,000 seniors who start on defense. And Cliff Kingsbury is with us now. Good morning, Cliff, head coach at Texas Tech. Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Hey, Coach, I'm from Lubbock, and I know you guys are dealing with a tragedy there on campus. So just want you to know our thoughts and prayers are with you there at Texas Tech University. And stay strong as you try to prepare for a road game up in West Virginia.
Yes, sir. We appreciate it. And obviously, our thoughts and prayers go out to the fallen officer and, horrible tragedy. But we will we'll keep moving this morning and try to get prepared.
Cliff, I want to go back to Big 12 media days. And there was a guy who asked you a question. His name was Art DeLugich of the Lano News. And he went on and asked about a minute and a half long question about your recruiting and defense and how you can't find 15 guys that could hold the opponent to 30 points a game, and your defense has come out and played a hell of a lot better this year. Did you by any chance go and find Art DeLugich and call him up and say, hey, Art, what do you think now, huh?
Who would have thought the Lano News would have such hard-hitting journalism?
Good barbecue, but not hard-hitting news.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. I mean, I like the river there. That's all I know about down there. But, no, I mean, we've obviously our fan base. I understand the frustration with the way we had played defense here for a while. And much respect to Coach Gibbs, who's going into his third year this year, for sticking around, sticking it out. It takes time to build an identity, build a culture on that side of the football. If you look at the track records of the very successful teams in our league, it's teams that have consistency at the defense coordinator position, and we hadn't had that here. And so to get Coach Gibbs in the third year with our guys believing in the system, believing in each other, we've definitely made strides, and hopefully we can keep that going.
Coach, in addition to the continuity from the coaching staff and also the experience in the scheme, what else has led to this resurgence on the defensive side of the ball? Is it depth? I saw where you brought in a lot of JUCO guys, and has that helped as well?
It has. As you know, in our league, you're going to play 80 snaps a game minimum. I mean, everybody's playing fast. Everybody's pushing the tempo for the most part. So you got to be able to rotate in fresh bodies that can consistently tackle, consistently hold the point of attack in the run game and be able to rush the passer. And so we feel like we have more depth than we've had. Our scout teams are much improved, which is a huge part of being successful. And so we just had to keep acquiring depth, and that has helped this season.
And turnovers have been a huge deal for you guys. How much does that the stuff that you work on leading up to the season where you say, all right, we need to be more aggressive with turnovers, we need to force more of these, and how much of it just as the game flows that you kind of are in the right place at the right time?
I think it's definitely a combination, but that's a number we've been in the negative since I've been here at Texas Tech, and last year we only had 13 on the entire season, and that was a point of emphasis. It's been a point of emphasis every day at practice. And it also has to do with, you know, getting better players in that can make plays on the football and get the football out. So it's a combination of all those things. But I've been really excited about the way we've taken the football away. And if we can continue to win in that area, you know, we'll have a chance for in every game.
Coach, I want to go back to something I just mentioned, and that's JUCO players. Because I can recall, I'm old cat, and I just recall when Coach Snyder up there at K-State was rebuilding that program, or building that program, I should say, and he was going the JUCO route. Now it seems like a lot of people dip into the JUCO ranks, but that used to be looked upon as a stigma. Oh, these are some of the untouchables you don't want. How is it viewed now? Because it seems like everyone, if they have a huge need, they go looking at these JUCOs.
Yeah, that's a great question. Coach Snyder has done it on a level that is pretty much unparalleled. I mean, he'll take huge classes of junior college players and develop them and have success right away. And that's not always the case. A lot of the thinking is it takes about a year for those players to adjust to the game. But we were fortunate enough to get a bunch of ours at mid-year, so they were able to go through spring football, go through a summer with our strength and conditioning program, and then a fall camp. And I really think that help catch them up to speed with what we're doing and the level of play. So I think it all comes down to how much do you know about the player previously. I think if you take a reach on a player late in the recruiting process just to take a guy, you can get yourself into trouble, and we've all made that mistake. But if you do your research, you build a relationship, you know what the player is about, I think you have a fairly good chance of them turning out to be a part of your program.
Gio and Jones with Texas Tech head football coach Cliff Kingsbury across the country on CBS Sports Radio. You got West Virginia coming up. They've been a thorn in your side during your tenure there at Texas Tech. Other than them being good at times, what are some of the challenges that they present for you?
Yeah, they've done a nice job against us. They have a good scheme defensively that's really effective against the spread offense. We haven't been able to run the football very well against them, and they made us one-dimensional last year. I don't think we ran the ball but 10 times, and that's what they want you to do. And so we know we have to establish a running game early. We have to come out and play a physical game. And then offensively, they've really taken strides this year. They hired Coach Spavital, who's got their quarterback playing at a high level. They're one of the top offenses in the country, and anytime you go up there, it's a battle. So we know we have our hands full, and we're trying to get ready for it.
Coach, what are you seeing from Will Grier? It seemed like the guy can't lose. Well, he lost the two games since he jumped into the college ranks, starting at Florida, of course, and now up there at West Virginia. What stands out about his game?
He's a tough player, first and foremost. He'll stand in there and make the tough throw. Is more elusive than people think. Extends plays well. Can pick up first downs with his feet. You know, coach's kid. You can see he's a smart player. Doesn't turn the ball over. So I've been very impressed with the film I've seen on him.
Do you still feel like you're the new kid on the block, the younger guy? I mean, when you came in, you first got the job, it was like, man, like taking the world by storm, young cat coming in, fresh blood. Now, you've been there for a while. Do you still feel like you have an advantage in recruiting, being still one of the younger head coaches out there?
Yeah, I mean, I think everybody has their own niche in recruiting, and obviously we're in a great state, which helps us, and we have great facilities and a great fan base. But there's some other, you know, younger coaches. We got Lincoln and Coach Campbell down there doing a heck of a job. So I'm not the super young guy anymore. But I feel like after, you know, going into year five this year, I feel like it's kind of settled in for me.
Coach, let's talk about your offense. Shamonic, of course, your new quarterback there, and you're going up against that Tony Gibson defense. They're giving up a few more points than they were a season ago. How do you attack that group there at West Virginia?
Yeah, we got to be able to hit our shots when we take them and then consistently run the football. He's a guy who has done a great job defending spread offenses, mixes up his coverages a ton, mixes up his pressures. And they play very hard. They come downhill. They hit you. They have a tough mentality on that side of the football that he's developed. And we've had our struggles against them. So we know it'll be a big challenge. We feel like offensively we're starting to get a little bit of rhythm right now, and hopefully we can build on that.
Coach, speaking of building on that, because a number of teams in the Big 12, of course, run spread offenses. They chunk it all over the place. Yes, you want to have some balance with the running game. So when you're taking on these Big 12 defenses, they see similar offenses on a week-to-week basis. How do you switch it up, or is it just the different personnel that makes the huge difference, or are there new wrinkles you try to incorporate on a week-to-week basis?
It's a great question. I think it's a combination of personnel, trying to find the right matchup, and then obviously each week you're going to try and show some things you haven't shown before. But it is unique in that I guess about 8 of the 10 offenses or 9 of the 10 offenses in our league are very similar, and Kansas State is kind of that outlier now, and so the preparation for them is more challenging, where 10 years ago it was the exact opposite. You know, nobody was running this. Coach Leach brought this in, and it was tough to defend. So I think there is a more sense of urgency each week of having some new wrinkles, doing some different things, trying to find your personnel matchups than maybe there was in the past.
Talking to Cliff Kingsbury on CBS Sports Radio, you a big picture guy? Like you mentioned year 5, and when you came into the job, you're thinking, I need to be here by this time. Are you someone that sets those goals, or are you more of like a year-to-year dude?
I'm more of a day-to-day guy. I mean, just try to improve each day, try to get better at what you're doing, try to improve your processes each day, and those long-term things tend to take care of themselves.
Do you ever feel sorry for your opponents? I mean, in this day and age, you know, people, everyone gets a trophy just for participating, just for showing up. You put 65 on Kansas last week. At some point, he's like, all right, that's enough. Let's call the dogs off. Feel sorry for those cats.
No, I mean, no. I've had a bunch of points put on me a bunch of times. So I think, all your players deserve to play. They deserve to go out there and execute at a high level. And, I understand this. It's not my job to tell them to not score. And if somebody can score 100 points on me, then they should do it. I shouldn't be mad at them. I should be mad at myself for not being able to stop them.
Yes! Great answer. Yes! In the face. Love it. Now, can you send me some Whataburger up here in New York City?
You're missing that, huh? What do y'all got? You got some late-night pizza spots.
Oh, well, I don't want no damn pizza, Coach. I need some Whataburger. I need some Josie's and some Las Brisas. I'll take some Las Brisas.
There you go.
And Double Nickel.
They sleep on our restaurant.
I know.
It's pretty strong.
Exactly. Real strong. Well, you keep doing what you're doing. Good luck in Morgantown this weekend, Coach.
Appreciate it, fellas. Thanks for having me.
Cliff Kingsbury, Texas Tech head football coach. Coming up next, we're going to talk some NFL. Adrian Peterson with another team in 2017. We're coming right back.
It's Gio and Jones on CBS Sports Radio.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
I mean, I actually stole one of his words that he used last night in a tweet and used it this morning because I thought it was just perfect. Calamity.
Ah.
This is a calamity. And I'm sort of with him. I mean, someone tweeted us, I was just going through the Gio and Jones tweets about this, and someone tweeted us, what were really the expectations? Nobody really thought they were going to win the World Cup. It's not about that.
Right.
It's about competing like they did 4 years ago. It's about watching them try to take a step forward against the best teams in the world. It's about gathering once every 4 years to watch this together. That's what it's about. Now you don't even have a chance to do that.
We just want them to be a partial participant, right?
That is right.
They're not even that.
They're not even that.
Come on.
It's embarrassing. Totally embarrassing. Totally and utterly embarrassing.
Okay.
Adrian Peterson was traded to the Arizona Cardinals yesterday.
Good for him.
And I don't think that he has anything left in the tank. The times that I watched him this year, and I know that you can make the case that a back like him, he's got to get into the game, he's got to get into the flow of the game, he's better in the second quarter than he is the first because he's got a couple carries in him and whatever, and he didn't get that opportunity in New Orleans because there was a 3-man rotation and he was the third guy and barely got a sniff. But just watching him when he did get those opportunities, he looks done to me. He looks old. He looks like his legs aren't the same. He cannot turn the corner like he used to. His running style looks different to me. I just think that he's cooked. So I know that the Arizona Cardinals do not have a guy that they like to lean on. I know that Andre Ellington has been really good out of the backfield catching passes for them. He's right. At least provided that David Johnson element on third downs. But Kerwin Williams isn't any good. Chris Johnson isn't any good. So maybe there's maybe a shot in the dark. You think, okay, he's angry and he's going to go out there and get him. But no.
Well, we'll have to see. Playing behind this offensive line there at Arizona, he's going to be the first and second down option, and we'll see how he does. This offensive line hasn't played that stellar this season. You look at the back's yards per attempt. Chris Johns was 2.5. Andre Ellington, he's more of that scat back, the third down guy, as you mentioned, a receiver out of the backfield. You know, even David Johnson, his yards per attempt, 2.1. You got a small sample size. He went out so early during the season. So they have not been opening up a ton of holes. The longest run from scrimmage thus far, 14 yards, really? That's it for this offensive line. So he's more of a battering ram, between the tackles guy. So we'll see what he's able to bring to the table. He has a small sample size, didn't get that many touches there with New Orleans. So it makes sense for both teams. I understand why New Orleans loves this Kamara kid, Alvin Kamara. I did too, coming out of Tennessee. Hell of a running back. He's a guy who can be a three-down back, even though he's going to share time there with Mark Ingram. So the future is bright for him. So I can understand you're like, okay, let's get Adrian out of this running back room. We know who we like. It's Ingram. It's Kamara. That's the future for our running back situation. See if we can move him. And they do. And the Cardinals had a need. And maybe he's the answer. Maybe he's not. But I think with this offensive line that they have there for Arizona, it's going to be tough duty for any running back. And we'll see what he has left in the tank and whether or not he can still be at least between the tackles running back with a number of touches.
Yeah, I'd be floored if this guy ended up having a great season from here on out. I really don't think there's anything left.
Well, you got to block for him, first of all. He can't open up his own holes.
I understand. But I just don't think the great thing about Adrian Peterson was a lot of that, not to say it didn't matter, but I mean, he was able to overcome that stuff in the past, and he's got to be in the perfect situation now. He's certainly not in the perfect situation. When I first saw Adrian Peterson traded, I said, oh no, please no. Because I thought that maybe the Vikings would have gone and brought him back with the Dalvin Cook injury. And I said, they can't possibly. Please, please, please. And I saw Arizona Cardinals, like, all right, thank God. Because I was legitimately scared there.
Oh, wow.
For a minute that they would actually go and do that with the Cook injury, which is just more and more annoying right now. And they've been Sam Bradford. Isn't that just so Minnesota Vikings that this guy goes out and plays the best game of his life and then doesn't play basically after that?
Yeah.
Misses the next three games and comes out and re-aggravates his knee. He's just got to retire. Just get out of here. He cannot stay healthy for a long period of time. I mean, he did last year for a while, but, I mean, this year's a different story.
Yeah, he's going to be walking around like Jim Otto. You know, long-time offensive lineman for the Raiders.
Skinny legs too.
Yeah, he's a tall, thin, and rail cat, and had injuries there at Oklahoma, and he's definitely amassed them since he's been a pro. And your team, man, I just it's amazing how they're always injury plagued. It's just, what is going on in Minnesota? It was Cook. It was Bridgewater a year ago. You go trade for Bradford. Now he's sidelined. Just crazy.
I know.
There's no way to explain what happens there. And I think it's your fault.
The Mets to it, too. It might be. And then you see, you look at the Packers, and they lose their running back. They lose their two tackles. You know, in 2010, they put 20 guys on IR, and they still won the Super Bowl.
Right.
But,
never lose the quarterback.
You got a guy like that.
Well, you should start cheering for the Packers.
No. Coming up next, U.S. soccer fan extraordinaire Jason LaCanfora on CBS Sports Radio.